from deep inside your radio.
And from London, England, simultaneously. I don't know how that happens. That is a modern miracle, ladies and gentlemen. You know, this country, this United Kingdom, which this broadcast is originating this week, has been rent asunder and left for gobsmacked by the news that members of the Prime Minister's cabinet and people who work for him have called up the bullying hotline to complain about his treatment of them. Just imagine, just roll that around in your head for a minute. A, the notion of a country that has a bullying hotline for grown-ups, as was observed by Dave Gorman, my new radio pal, on whose broadcast I was this morning plugging the impending release of my new record, Greed and Fear. Thank you. He pointed out, well, it should be an anti-bullying hotline, shouldn't it? They're not taking calls from, you know, big guys going, well, they're not scared of me anymore. What do I do? It's an anti-bullying hotline. And supposedly, according to these stories, people who worked for British Prime Minister Gordon Brown were calling and complaining confidentially till it was released to the press, at which point the hotline was shut down. Oops. That he was bullying them. Their boss. Imagine that. Imagine being treated badly by your boss. What an outrage. I just have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that's the difference right there between Great Britain and the United States. It is true what they say about the Brits, apparently. You know, pinky out. And just the story was bruited about the media, I think, in the fond hope that it would drive the popularity ratings of Gordon Brown, which are nothing to write home about, drive them further down in the run-up to the impending election. Didn't do that. But certainly, if such a story were circulated about Barack Obama at this point, it would drive his popularity ratings up 25 points. I mean, the idea that he would be sitting at the healthcare summit and actually, you know, nudging somebody when they misspoke, as opposed to, well, I think, no, the CBO scores that differently on the deficit. No, just elbow them, babe, you know, because it's playground ball. So if you need to call the bullying hotline, it's been closed down. Stand up for yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, news from AFAC. You know that the Afghan Taliban's top military commander was captured, I believe last week, by the Pakistanis. Guess where he's going? Guess who's going to question him and interrogate him? Think back to the experience of the Pakistani nuclear expert who proliferated nuclear secrets to Iran, North Korea, and Libya, AQ Khan. He was held in Pakistan and was only allowed to be questioned by Pakistanis. Same thing with this guy. He is not to be extradited, according to the High Court in Pakistan, Muhal Abdul Ghani Baradar. He was arrested, and the court has banned extraditing four other Taliban chiefs, also reportedly seized recently. Although Pakistan hasn't confirmed their identities. So I guess they don't have any. The order was in response to a petition filed by a rights activist to prevent the detainees from being sent abroad. Because you know what happens when Americans interrogate. The High Court has ordered that none of the leaders should be handed over to the U.S. or Afghanistan. No one other than Pakistani intelligence or security officials should be given access to the Taliban leaders. So if they have any secrets to tell about the complicity of Pakistani intelligence, they'll tell them to Pakistani intelligence. It's a system. Ladies and gentlemen, what's the United States Corps of Engineers up to? 8 years after about $1 million was spent on a Santa Paula, California creek fish ladder for steelhead trout, the federal government is looking to spend $7.5 million to build a new one because the old one was deemed useless when the fish most needed. That's good work, Army Corps. The Army Corps is having to complete an expensive do-over of the project. It highlights how difficult and costly it is to restore populations of endangered fish, especially in rivers that have been altered with dams or channels by the Army Corps of Engineers. Fish ladders are supposed to help the fish get around such man-made structures, but This one has proved more of a hindrance than a help. It just doesn't work as anticipated, says Darren Brumbach, a fisheries biologist with the National Marine Fisheries Service. The Army Corps is working feverishly to get the new fish ladder approved by various regulatory agencies before the $7.5 million in funding, part of the stimulus bill, vanishes. Oh, don't let it vanish. Flush it down. The fish ladder sits about a mile upstream from the confluence of the Santa Clara River. I don't understand that writing at all. You can't have one thing confluing. It was part of a massive $14.8 million flood control project that turned the sides of the Santa Clara River, the sides of the Santa Paula Creek into walls of concrete. That's something the Army Corps knows how to do. Believe me, having grown up in L.A., I can tell you. The ladder works during low flows when there's a large amount of water and lots of sediment. The pools the fish use to jump over the 17 steps on the ladder fill up with rocks and sand. That makes the ladder a hindrance rather than a help. Good work, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, this just in. The Washington Post has discovered that Ahmed Chalabi, the one-time U.S. ally, is in the limelight and his actions are proving controversial. On the eve of Iraq's parliamentary elections, Chalabi is driving an effort aimed at weeding out candidates. They ran this story this week as if it's news. He's weeding out candidates, of course, tied to the Sunnis, infuriating American officials and some Iraqis who suspect his motive is to bolster his own political bloc. Well, why would you think that, after all he's done for us? A Shiite, Chalabi has defended the work of the commission he's heading as legal and crucial during the period of transition to Iraq's first sovereign government. What? Well, I thought they'd been sovereign. Didn't they? Wasn't it mission? His reemergence on the political scene has rankled U.S. officials and fueled concerns that Sunnis and other secular Iraqis will be marginalized. And I think they even get around to the fact that he's been accused of spying for Iran. So good work, Washington Post. Keep it up. Now, the buried lead department, ladies and gentlemen, also from the Washington Post, recruiting to meet the goals for increasing the size of the Afghan army has to be stepped up even more to replace the 20% loss of troops each year from deaths, serious injuries, and AWOL. That's the lead of the story. So it's a story about trying to get more troops into the Afghan army. We go way down here to citing several elements that make up for the attrition in the Afghan army. Listen to this. Especially in light of what we sat through, some of us, this week, the seven-hour thing. Quote, the U.S. coalition has just introduced a medical care program not just for members of the Afghan army, but also to include their families. All right, so you want medical care? Join the Afghan army. And way at the end of the story, how are they going to deal with all the ethnic divisions in the Afghan army? Because there are many, many tribes, many divisions. That's the way they do. All these recruits, according to a U.S. military spokesman, ultimately will be a united military because they will, quote, go through the ethnic washing machine before they go into basic training, unquote. I want me one of those. I think Great Britain could use one of those. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, also news of a blizzard of banknotes, funds, currency is flying out of Afghanistan in full view of customs officers at the Kabul airport as part of a cash exodus that is confounding U.S. officials and raising concerns about the money's origin. The cash, estimated to total well over $1 billion a year, flows mostly to Dubai, where many wealthy Afghans now park their families and funds. So long as the departing cash is declared at the airport, its transfer is legal. But at the time when the United States and its allies are spending billions of dollars to prop up the government of Karzai, the volume of the outflow has stirred concerns that funds have been diverted from aid. Isn't that nice? Says one American official, we don't really know what's going on. Quote of the week. Hello, welcome to the show.
Farmer Brown gets all messed up. He walks outside and he acts real tough. Throws that coop door open wide. And he sings this song when he walks inside. I'm gonna choke my chicken,
choke my chicken,
choke my chicken,
choke my chicken,
choke my old Farmer Brown. He told the man his angel's out of town. The Farmer Brown knew what to say. He told him, rooster, you can fly away. I'm gonna choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken till the sun goes down. I'm gonna choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken till the sun goes down. Now way back in the olden days, Noah's Ark could sail away. Two by two they all could hear, and Noah's voice sang loud and clear. I'm gonna choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken, choke my chicken till the sun comes out. Explain it all and let alone. Stand it, seat it, send it on. But the moral of this sordid tale, she just can't stop the U.S. mail. I'm gonna choke my chicken,
choke my chicken,
choke my chicken,
choke my chicken,
choke my chicken, whether rain or shine.
Chicken, choke my chicken,
choke my chicken till the sun goes down. I'm gonna choke my chicken,
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 choke my chicken
till the sun goes down.
From the edge of Leicester Square in London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. You don't have to look far for evidence that the crowds at the Winter Games in Vancouver know how to have a good time. And as if any more proof is needed that a wild Olympic atmosphere permeates British Columbia's largest city, now there's an apparent condom shortage. An emergency shipment of condoms is making its way across Canada right now to the West Coast city for final ceremonies. Health officials in Vancouver have already provided 100,000 free condoms to the roughly 7,000 athletes and officials. And officials at the Games. About 14 condoms per person. But as of Wednesday, those supplies started running dangerously low. So the Canadian Foundation for AIDS Research stepped up to make sure nothing went awry. Free condoms first started to be distributed at the Olympics in Barcelona at the 1992 Games. But this appears to be the first time that a shortage has struck the Games. But wait, there's more! The world champion in her sport, Japan's Mei Sato, is an athletic, dedicated, and competitive person. And she thinks it's high time her discipline, too, gets Olympic recognition. The sport of pole dancing. That's right. Say thousands of pole dancers and the rapidly growing number of international and national federations transforming what was once the exclusive property of strip clubs and cheap bars into a respectable and highly athletic event. I could definitely see pole dancing in the Olympics, says Sato, who won the second international pole dancing fitness championships in Tokyo 2 months ago. I would love, she says, to win a gold medal. Established sports such as squash and cricket have failed to make the Olympic cut. Baseball and softball were recently given the axe in the IOC's decision to end its support of unofficial demonstration sports after the Summer Games in 1992 has made getting a foothold all that much harder. Still, pole dancing needs to first gain IOC recognition as a sport. But Hong Kong-based Anya Preshpasko, the founder of the International Pole Dancing Fitness Association, believes Olympic recognition is only a matter of time. There will be a day when the Olympics see pole dancing as a sport, she says. The Olympic community needs to acknowledge the number of people doing pole fitness now. We're shooting for 2012 in London. No, it's already too late for any new sports to be added to the London Games. Pole dance advocates note that more unlikely sports have gotten into the Olympics. Tug of war was one of the early Olympic medal contests. Curling. Need we say more? After a great deal of feedback from the pole dance community, many of us have decided it's about time pole fitness is recognized, and what better way for recognition than to be part of the Olympics, says a spokesman. It has the wow factor. The Olympics, it's a movement, and everybody needs one every day. Yeah, why not? You know, rhythmic gymnastics, after all, with the rhythms and the thing. You know the one I mean? Yeah, sure you do. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not number one. We're not number one. At least where informational technology is concerned, according to the annual Connectivity Scorecard. What do they know? It's a global study of useful connectivity that measures infrastructure, complementary skills, software, and informed usage of IT around the world. Wolf Blitzer pronunciation. Sweden has overtaken the United States in the annual survey of 50 countries around the world. The United States had held the top spot. This year, Sweden dominated by scoring strongly in two big areas. Broadband deployment and skilled workers. Well, of course we don't have skilled workers. Been to our schools lately? All right, we're number two. Say it with me now. We're news of the nuclear world. This nuclear plant, it's cheap, it's clean, it's safe, it's too cheap to meter, it's too clean to be, but it's closed. The nuclear plant in Vermont, the Vermont Yankee plant, which has, as you know, been troubled by leaks of tritium, a radioactive isotope, into the nearby groundwater. It's not in the drinking water yet. And Entergy Nuclear, the New Orleans-based firm that runs Yankee, has now found traces of another isotope, cesium-137, about 15 feet underground in the trench where it's searching for the tritium leak. The cesium is only in trace amounts. They say the result of radiation from nuclear bomb tests and Chernobyl. Well, that was clean and cheap and safe. But William Irwin, radiological health chief for the Vermont Department of Health, says it's too soon to say what the source of the cesium was. Testing, he says, could reveal the source. It's a fission product when uranium splits. Goodbye, uranium. Sorry about that. Nuclear fuel failures would have left cesium and strontium in the pipes, said one official. Meanwhile, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission says it's sending Don Jackson, a regional branch chief, to oversee Entergy efforts to search for the tritium leak, given the fact that Entergy has put the head of its own tritium task force on administrative leave. That was for his role in Entergy giving false information to state regulators about underground pipes containing radioactivity. Sounds very reassuring, doesn't it? All the way around. And then, later in the week, the Vermont Senate voted 26-4 to block a license extension for that Yankee nuclear plant, citing radioactive leaks and misstatements in testimony by plant officials. Unless the chamber reverses itself, it would be the first time in more than 20 years that the public or its representatives decided to close a reactor. And lawmakers also voiced doubts that Entergy would have enough money to decommission the plant in view of the costly leak. So they can't run it, and they can't not run it. Finally, federal inspectors are at Calvert Hills, Maryland, the nuclear power plant this week, to investigate an unexpected shutdown of both reactors last week, which plant spokesman said was apparently, you know, because they're so safe and so regulated and so everything. The shutdown was triggered by melting snow leaking through the plant's roof. Because that's the future, isn't it? Too clean and cheap and safe to use. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, I know, we didn't have Tiger Woods' apology last week, but you heard it everywhere else. I don't need to do that. On Friday, bronze medalist Scott Lago voluntarily offered to leave the Olympics after risque pictures of him showed up on the internet site TMZ. He received his bronze medal on Thursday night and wore it out partying afterwards while wearing a Team USA t-shirt. A photo was taken of a woman kneeling below his waist to kiss his medal. Lago apologized to the U.S. Olympic Committee officials and the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association before heading home. Jersey Shore star Ronnie Ortiz Magro has apologized for making homophobic comments during a fight. Previously unseen footage of the Jersey Shore star involved in a brawl leaked onto that very same website, TMZ. It shows Ortiz Magro describing his opponent as an effing, well, you know, two derogatory words for homosexual. He has now apologized for his comments in a message on Twitter. Oh, he's so connected. We should be number one. Suzanne Summers has apologized to the family of Patrick Swayze for her statement to a reporter. She reportedly said that the actor could have lived longer if he had tried some alternative medication and not chemotherapy. This is after Whoopi Goldberg criticized Suzanne Summers for her comment. Lisa Rinna, do you know who that is? She apologized to Hills starlet Heidi Montag for saying that she, Lisa, wouldn't allow her two daughters to see photos of Montag, the 23-year-old celebrity, who famously underwent 10 plastic surgery procedures in just one day. Rinna, 46-year-old actress, said she ripped up a recent cover of People featuring Montag surgeries. We have two girls. I don't think it's something you want to bring in the house and say, oh, look. But later, Rinna, to the apology, said she didn't mean to hurt Montag's feelings. Of course, talking about her face, she probably has none. I apologize to Miss Montag if my words were taken and used against her in the press. I did not slam her or her surgeries, for the record. Dateline Kabul. 12 civilians died over the weekend during a NATO assault on Marja, an insurgent stronghold in southern Afghanistan. The deaths prompted U.S. Commander General Stanley McChrystal to issue an apology and to suspend the use of rockets. Rockets were directed at a compound from which insurgents were firing on NATO and Afghan bases. We deeply regret this tragic loss of life, General McChrystal said in a statement. Dateline Carthage, Missouri. Member of the Missouri Southern State University Board of Governors has withdrawn from active participation as a board member after he used that same derogatory slur commonly aimed at homosexuals during the board's annual retreat. MSSU board member David Ansley issued a written apology through the board on Monday for making what he called an unacceptable comment. Hey, what's Marion Barry been up to since the goddamn bitch set him up for his crack cocaine arrest? Well, he's now a member of the Washington, D.C. City Council, and he's apologized this week for causing the city what he called great embarrassment for improperly awarding a city contract to a woman he had been dating. The former mayor says he will not give up a political career. It now spans nearly five decades. Standing near the pulpit in Union Temple Baptist Church, Barry said he did not use good judgment when he hired Donna Watts Breithaupt after they began a romantic relationship in 2008. I apologize for my actions and lack of sound judgment for causing great embarrassment to the city. I am truly sorry. I am truly sorry. I intend to work as hard as I can to help repair the damage. Anybody got some crack? No, he didn't say that. Unquote, Marion Barry. Citibank, the third largest holding bank in the United States, has apologized to a gay social networking website after its founder claimed the bank had blocked his account due to objectionable content on the site's blog. Known as Fabulous, F-A-B-L-U-L-I-S, the site bills itself as the network that connects gay men with amazing experiences down the block and around the world. It's populated currently by videos of gay men explaining why they're, quote, fabulous. You see. On Wednesday, with a blog post entitled Citibank is Not So Fabulous, company founder Jason Goldberg said the bank had blocked his recently opened account after a review of the site. A Citibank spokesman says the situation has nothing to do with the content of the site. He says the company reserves the right to not open an account or close it if there's illegal or discriminatory content on its website, but the bank has apologized to Goldberg in both a personal email and in a statement shared with the press. Just last week, the Wall Street Journal reported that a sillyunderwear.com, a company that sells silly underwear on the web, was denied a Citibank account due to concerns over its site content. Well, after all, Citibank is owned by the United States government at this point. So what are you going to do? Not bank with Citibank, I guess. MSNBC's Olympic Update show aired a live interview this week with a guy claiming to be Ryan Miller, the star U.S. Olympic hockey goalie. In a live interview, the caller recalled his 5-3 win against Canada last Sunday night, noting that, quote, everything just clicks sometimes, so that he can make 42 saves during the game. He also said, quote, we're feeling very confident about the gold medal win, but it was a prank. MSNBC apologized for the mistake. The Canadian women's ice hockey team has been forced to apologize for celebrating their Olympic gold by swinging champagne and smoking cigars. They're hockey-playing girls. What do you want them to do? Buy shoes? The partying took place after the players had collected their medals for the 2-0 win over the United States. The International Olympic Committee is looking into the incident. A Hockey Canada statement said, the members of Team Canada apologize, with an S, if their on-ice celebrations after fans had left the building have offended anyone. If, in the excitement of the moment, the celebration left the confines of our dressing room and shouldn't have. Another Canadian apology. The former residents of a bulldozed black community and their descendants have received an official apology from the mayor of Halifax, Nova Scotia. Peter Kelly apologized for the loss of Africville, the black community that stood for more than a century before it was torn down to make room for a bridge in the 1960s. Like this didn't happen anywhere else in the 1960s. I'm here today on behalf of Halifax Regional Council to deliver a formal apology to all those whose lives have been altered by the loss of Africville, Kelly said at a ceremony held at the YMCA. Oh, that they didn't tear down. We realize words cannot undo what has been done, but we're profoundly sorry and apologize to each and every one of you. The repercussions of what happened to Africville linger to this day. They haunt us in the form of lost opportunities for the young people who were never nurtured in the rich traditions, culture, and heritage of Africville. But they got a bridge. The Riverside County, California town of Temecula has apologized to a local artist for removing his nude portrait from a show at a city-owned building. The mayor sent Jeff Hebron a letter that said the city recognizes the importance of artistic communication and was sorry for offending some in the arts community. The Hurt Locker producer Nicholas Chartier has apologized for an email that solicited votes and disparaged, though not by name, prime competitor Avatar. That is apparently a violation of the rules of the Academy. They got rules? It's an Academy? Britain's Prime Minister Gordon Brown, elbowing aside his assistants, apologized Wednesday to the tens of thousands of poor British children shipped to former colonies such as Australia, where instead of a better life they were promised, many were treated to harsh conditions, neglect, and abuse. Brown said the country was sorry for the shameful and misguided child migrant program of the 20s to the 1960s, in which an estimated 150,000 British children were sent to distant colonies. They were intended to ease pressure on British social services, provide the children with a fresh start, and supply the empire with a sturdy supply of white workers. Well, those are all good motives. We are sorry they were allowed to be sent away when at their most vulnerable. We are sorry that instead of caring for them, this country turned its back, he told the House of Commons. France's National Railroad has apologized for a poster warning travelers to be suspicious of Romanians and to report their behavior. And Archbishop Robert Zollitsch of Freiburg, the head of the German Bishops' Conference, has apologized to abuse victims in the wake of a scandal centered on a Jesuit school in Berlin, where two priests systematically abused children in the 1970s and 1980s. Well, of course they were systematic. It was Germany. Throughout the nation, 120 former students have alleged they were abused at seven schools. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Now, you do know that there's a big flurry of activity, a measure of concern, economic concern, in the EU, the European Union, over it's driven the euro down to its knees, apparently. And it's all caused by Greece, the nation of Greece, which you're not supposed to have big budget deficits once you're in the EU. And Greece apparently concealed the level of its budget deficits by, instead of borrowing money, having a little arrangement, a little kind of off-the-books arrangement with, guess who? Goldman Sachs. The Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke says, we're looking into a number of questions related to Goldman Sachs and their derivatives arrangements with Greece. And financial firms have been engaging in trades to bet on a Greek default. Bernanke says using these instruments in a way that intentionally destabilizes a currency or country is counterproductive, and I'm sure the SEC will be looking into that. Goldman Sachs in 2000 and 2001 gave Greece these exotic forms of debt, which may have misled investors about the country's true investors and the EU's own statistical agency about the country's true financial condition. Goldman served as investment banker for Greece as the country borrowed billions by entering complex financial contracts known as cross-currency swaps. They allowed Greece to limit the amount of debt it seemed to be taking on to fund its national budget. A Goldman Sachs spokesman declined to comment. The company, as a matter of policy, does not address questions on legal or regulatory matters. Speaking to a British parliamentary committee earlier this week, Gerald Corrigan, a Goldman managing director, said the transactions could have been more transparent, but emphasized Goldman was only one of several firms involved. And then this explanatory statement by a former member of the Federal Reserve this week to the BBC defending Goldman Sachs in this matter.
Wasn't there also responsibility for the Greek officials to not go fishing for something like this and to try to get around some
They're
of these
politicians?
But and also, as I think we saw in a recent Wall Street Journal report, this was not unique to Greece. There are many who are trying to slip around the budget rules, slip around the accounting rules, and this was driven by the politicians, and so they were asking for this.
Yes, Goldman Sachs has gone, ladies and gentlemen, since last November when the chairman, Lloyd Blankfein, said we're doing God's work. They've gone from that to the hooker's defense. Well, they wanted it.
When Mr. Goldman paid Mr. Sachs, business ran on railroad tracks. The world was simpler, you can't forget. When Messrs. Sachs and Goldman met, said Mr. Goldman, for years and years, our guys have got the most between the ears. Said Mr. Sachs, let's unhook the reins and find new ways to profit off our traders' brains. Treasury. Smile.
Mr. Goldman gives a toss of his head. One of our guys runs the New York Fed. Noted Mr. Sachs has the market soared. We're totally wired in each department and board. We regulate ourselves, the wind's at our backs. Use the jolly Mr. Goldman to apply Mr. Sachs.
System is showing some cracks. Mr. Sachs to Mr. Goldman said, "We got it covered. Go back to bed."
Hank Paulson's our man, Mr. Sachs we call. We may get a haircut, but we won't go bald. Any bailout rules will be comfy and lax. Mr. Goldman was reassured by Mr. Sachs. Stearns went down, Mr. Sachs told his friend, and Lehman Brothers met a harsher end. Merrill Lynch was sold off via fax. A doer, Mr. Goldman told Mr. Sachs.
It's time, Mr. Goldman said, to pull some rank. So presto, said Mr. Sachs, we'll become a bank. We'll be covered by the payers of tax. Exalted Mr. Goldman to Mr. Sachs.
Mr. Sachs complained, we're insured by AIG. Mr. Goldman responded, that's fine with me. Our risky bets will be paid off in full, said Mr. Goldman, more than ever a raging bull. Unemployment is rising, Mr. Goldman observes, while their partnership is still riding a nerve. Profits in the billions, ignore the attacks, says a flush Mr. Goldman to a flush Mr. Sachs. Speedy gold out of flex, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. Speedy gold out of flex, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs.
This is Le Show, and now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A new report from the Department of Energy's Inspector General paints a dismal picture of the home weatherization program, part of the last year's stimulus package of the more than half a million homes nationwide targeted for energy-saving weatherization. Only 30,000, a little more than 5%, had actually been retrofitted against the weather by last week. The report says the target of 586,000 homes is over a three-year period. So, there... Kansas reached 4% of targeted homes, just 267 houses. Missouri did slightly better, 1,000 homes, or 5.6% of the target. The report does not break out weatherization by city. The government set aside $5 billion for weatherization. We found this data alarming, the IG writes, with some understatement. In short, the nation has not to date realized the potential economic benefits of the $5 billion in Recovery Act funds allocated to the program. The report in part blames the requirement that home weatherizers be paid prevailing wages, which the report says complicated the process. And last August, in response to an ACLU lawsuit, the Obama administration released a partially declassified 2004 report from the CIA's Inspector General. The report's description of the treatment of detainees, sufficiently shocking to prompt Attorney General Holder to appoint a prosecutor to look into allegations of abuse. Now additional documents make clear the depth of Inspector General John Helgerson's own concerns about the allegations in his 2004 report. He began by expressing doubts about the so-called Bybee memo, which served to justify the use of waterboarding. And he then turned to the waterboard issue later on and said three people had been interrogated with the waterboard. On one, the IG felt it had been used excessively beyond what the IG thought was the agreement with the Department of Justice. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed got 183, and here is the IG's word, applications. Applications, ladies and gentlemen. It was applied. A technique was applied 183 times. That was excessive waterboarding, according to the Inspector General of the CIA. Speaking of which, that was News of Inspector General, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Speaking of which, former President George W. Bush and former Vice President Dick Cheney met face-to-face this week for the first time since leaving office over a week ago, just days after Cheney was hospitalized for a fifth heart attack. They shook hands and exchanged grins on the steps of Cheney's residence. "Mr. President, welcome," said Cheney. "Looking good," replied Bush. "Holding up," said Cheney. "Looking good," said Bush. "Could be worse," said Cheney. Come on. You can't make this stuff up. The two then waved to the camera and disappeared inside, where they met for more than an hour. Neither side would comment about what the two discussed. Cheney was supposed to attend the closed gathering of Bush administration alumni at Marriott Hotel in Washington, but Cheney withdrew because of his health condition. So Cheney invited Bush to have coffee at his home instead. And later on, Bush did something he has not done previously. He endorsed Cheney's campaign of attacks on the Obama administration, particularly its foreign and defense policies, noting that he, Bush, still preferred to stay out of the fray. He did extend an endorsement to Cheney's continued attacks. Wonder why that happened.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president, the action-packed diary of the man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
Who was it that said nothing focuses the mind like a fifth heart attack? Maybe it was Larry King. Maybe it was me. I probably wasn't paying attention. No doubt, as at the time of the Vietnam War, I had other priorities. But lying in that hospital bed, medicated up to my eyeballs, I had dreams. Awful dreams. Dreams of dying. Not real death, mind you. Just my speech going over poorly at the Conservative Political Action Committee conference. Although, in point of fact, I hadn't died there. I'd killed. Even had them chanting, "Run, Dick, run." Yet, there I was, leaving the hospital. Lucky I could even walk, Dick, walk. Funny how, just when you're ready to swing for the fences, life throws you curveballs. Maybe the guy said nothing focuses your mind like swinging too hard at curveballs. In any case, there I am in the secure, undisclosed den, laid out flatter than a dead buck on a Cherokee's roof rack, enjoying some of Lynn's fine nurturing foodstuffs. Lynn's the only woman whose kitchen skills improved after getting cooking tips from the Navy. And I'll admit it, all I could think of is, I'm out there all alone, defending the two-fisted policies that we put in place, while my erstwhile colleagues were about to gather for a reunion dinner to compare the size of their book deals. I didn't know whether they were playing me for a neocon sap, but I didn't intend to lie there, just waiting to find out. My former constituent in chief, the fellow who cleverly let me pick myself as his supposed deputy, was in town for the reunion. I sent word that I was too sick to go to the party, but just well enough to see him on my turf. As I expected, he bought it as eagerly as fresh intel from Ahmed Chalabi. He was coming over for coffee, but he was about to get creamed. Wednesday, 3:17 p.m.
So, Chainster, like I said in the photo op, looking good there, buddy.
Yeah, could be worse, Mr. President.
Sure could. Could be your sixth heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Guess I shouldn't joke about heart attacks so soon after, you know, the thing.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about it, sir. The only thing that really upsets my cardiovascular apple cart is stress.
Well, heck, Chainster, you're out of office. If my experience is anything to go under, stress ended January 20th last year.
Mm-hmm.
Cute story. I'm writing about that very day right now for my book. Mm-hmm. You know, my ghostwriter and I are talking about how nice the French ambassador was to me the day I left office. Mm-hmm. And I said to my writer, I said, you know, the trouble with the French is they don't have a word for memoir. And he said, you know, Mr. President, I think they do.
You know, Mr. President, it's been only a year, and I forget. How do you like your coffee?
Boiling hot. I guess I shouldn't joke about coffee so soon after.
You know, I'm sure you understand how stressful it's been taking all the flack when I go out on television or into the print media to promote the robust approach to defending this country that you so wisely bought into.
Well,
I mean, put yourself in my shoes. You look around, and you realize, hey, I am the only guy in this foxhole.
Well, sure, out in West Texas, the only guys in foxholes are foxes.
Not to diminish the perspicacity of your response, Mr. President, I happen to be referring to the military type of foxhole.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Sir Dick. I wouldn't know anything about that, and now that I mention it, neither would you. But, see, I just felt as though to where if you could sell that policy to me, see, you were the fella to sell it to the American people, especially through the rear-view mirror hindsight type deal. Sure am looking forward, speaking of that, to seeing old John Bolton at the reunion. I have a bet with Laura that his mustache is even bigger now that he's out of...
Sorry to interrupt your gripping rhodomontade, sir, but I got a train to catch, so I thought an enhanced persuasion technique might be appropriate. There you go.
Oh, geez, Dick. I had no idea you were strong enough to waterboard somebody single-handed.
Well, sir, after 5 heart attacks, you figure out the steroid dosage it takes to rouse me. Now, sir, about me being out there all alone.
Well, now, Chainster, you're not alone. Good old John Hughes giving interviews like he's on a damn book tour.
He is on a book tour. Hmm. And B, he's trying to keep his chiny hiney from being prosecuted.
I see. Unlike, who exactly?
Sir, let's recall, I was just your vice president.
Yeah, well, that's one thing nobody's gonna...
Just a few moments to drink in the implications. There we go.
Damn. You're like Sammy Sosa on steroids. Now look, Dick, I'm sorry, but I just can't join you in this little crusade. I got a book to write. Or at least I got a book to watch while it's being written.
Mr. President, I've got a book to write. Hell, everybody at that reunion except the waiters has got one. Mm. I'm going to need you to step up to the plate on this particular account. And I've got a wet washcloth and a steroid-enhanced arm that says you're going to do precisely that. Otherwise, if you're inclined to go French on me...
No, that's okay. It's all the same to you. I'd rather not go through that again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing about the French is they don't even have a word for déjà vu. So what do you need? Is it something maybe Jeb can do?
I'm going to need you to do a discreet number of interviews endorsing my leadership of the Obama defacement program. You know, amazingly enough, sir, you still have a great reservoir of goodwill among some of the American people. Just a simple endorsement of my enhanced opposition techniques could be profoundly helpful.
Chainster, you drive a hard bargain.
No bargain involved, sir.
No coffee either, apparently.
Yeah. Funny thing about the coffee. Hated to go all noir on my former constituent in chief. But that's the thing about the French. They don't even have a word for noir. And a partial diary for late February 2010. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 Things aren't worth anything. And would your world turn, or would you stand by everything that you believe in? You're living on what went before you. It's something that we all do. Don't leave it too late to find out, to sort out the stranger who's inside. There are no straight roads to happiness. The road must bend. And there is no one path to seek the truth. Each path must end somewhere. And I tell you, 'cause I love you, and you're hurting again. 'Cause I'm your best, best. There are no straight roads to happiness. The road must bend. And there is no one path to seek the truth. Each path must end somewhere. I tell you, 'cause I love you, and we're hurting again. 'Cause I'm your best, your best friend. Your best friend. And what would you do if I told you? What would you do if I told you some things aren't worth anything at all?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. Think of it. The program will be back next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave. Imagine that. How about horses? On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, that's more like it. It's all more like it. At two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, on your smartphone at stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at audible.com/leshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like pole dancing being in the Olympics if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The show congratulates Ruth Seymour for her more than three decades of service to KCRW and wishes her all the best. See, I missed the champagne. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of music heard hereon, always available, along with so much other stuff, at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Honolulu desks. You dodged a bullet, babe. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Adrian Bodenham at Global Radio, is that what they're calling it this week, for helping to make this week's broadcast possible. Can I bully you just a little bit, Adrian? Okay. Shut up! Shut your pie hole. It's a technique I learned from the bullying hot helpline. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.